Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. Today is February 15th, 2023. 2 days, no, 1 day, excuse me, after, I don't know why I feel like Valentine's Day is on the 13th, but 1 day after Valentine's Day. I hope you had a great one. We got Dr. Megan Anderson, my second friend that is actually a doctor. I love it.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Good morning. And I hope you did have a great Valentine's Day.
I had kind of a quiet Valentine's Day. My husband is an airline pilot, so...
Who does he fly for?
He flies for FedEx and the Air Force. That's what brought us to Delaware initially.
Thank you for your service. This is going to be a great podcast because my dad is retired from the Air Force. First graduating class of the Air Force Academy, class of 59. First person from Delaware, so...
Wow.
Big heart for the Air Force. Love it. Love the military. Awesome. And then my buddy, John, he flies for American Airlines. So
yeah, we have friends everywhere, but it makes for inconsistent holidays.
Where were you stationed?
We met out in Seattle, Washington,
cool.
And our next station was actually Dover, Delaware.
Okay.
Came here in 2012. We're here for about 3 years, which is actually, I'm a pelvic health PT, which we'll get to, but I used to work up at Bay Health. And then we went to the DC area for 4 years, and now we're back in Delaware, and he's out of active duty and enjoying beach life.
That's like, what was that movie? Castaway?
Yeah.
He was a FedEx pilot.
Yeah.
That's funny. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you for your service.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, we were stationed at out in New Mexico. So we were stationed out at Kirtland, El Centro, the Pentagon, retired, and then San Diego, and then Delaware. So
yeah,
it's definitely pretty cool. A lot of cool things to see out there. So, what do you do? I see we see you have Megan Anderson Physical Therapy, so I'm assuming it's physical therapy, but I'm sure there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, so I am a physical therapist, but I specialize in pelvic health. So okay. Mostly I specialize with working with women. I have another clinician that works with men, but we treat all the things that people aren't always talking about, like urinary incontinence, pelvic pain, sexual dysfunction, pregnancy, postpartum, all of that.
That all happens in the pelvic area.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Listen, let's get into it. I think, I think we're starting to see, you know, you'd be more of an expert on this, but we're starting to see people pay a little more attention to themselves. I think it's just this time in our lives, or maybe it's more available, but we do see a lot of opportunity for people to take better care of themselves.
Yeah, 100%. I'm so excited. I went out after I worked at Bay Health for a number of years, I started their pelvic health program and went out to the DC area and just launched on my own and started my practice there. Mm. And I love it because it just affords me time to be with the clients more and to just spend time understanding what's really important to them. So many times people go to PT and they think of it as just like a multi, you know, like they're going to be in it for a month and they're going like 3 days a week and it's a huge commitment. But I'm really working with people on higher level goals and just really helping them problem solve and get back to doing their sport, get back to doing the things they want in their life. And then we meet back up and problem solve what's going on and how they can do more of what they love. So I see people less often, you know.
Well, and unfortunately, that area, sometimes it doesn't feel like there's a lot of hope.
100%.
Right. So you get to, you know, just using the restroom, right? You know, my dad, you know, he's 85. My dad does really well, but every once in a while, some will pop up and some situations arise, and we have to take care of them. Super grateful. I live in the same town with my father because I couldn't imagine not being there for him. But, you know, and all of a sudden your whole world gets turned upside down when, you know, a parent or somebody of an upper age gets kind of screwed up a little bit. And, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel, but sometimes it can feel like there's no hope. And it's great that there's people out there doing physical therapy and working with people like that, that gives people hope.
Yeah. And one of the things that's, I often get the assumption that we only work with older people, and really the vast majority of people that I see are in their 30s and 40s, which is such a great time to start working on these things. So they start to notice that maybe they've given up going to the gym, or they just can't run around with their kids anymore, because after going through their pregnancy or having multiple pregnancies in a row, their body just doesn't feel the same as it used to. So yeah. I really, really love getting younger people in the door and really empowering them with tools to go on and live their life. And I get excited because a lot of times they'll check back in with me if they have another birth or if something comes up down the road, and we can sort through those issues quickly. And I certainly have older people on my schedule as well. It's, you know, it's kind of a dark statistic, but one of the leading causes that leads to a loss of independence is continence issues. And so really getting people thinking about it before it's a major problem impacting their, you know, ability to live independently. So like in their 60s, in their 70s, starting to talk about these things and give them some tools to empower their pelvis, really.
Yeah.
You know, like we can fix small issues. We can't, you know, necessarily get control of a problem when it's, I should back that up. I mean, I've had people as, you know, in their 90s, like, you know, muscles are muscles and they can always be worked on. But sure. If cognitive changes and things like that start to happen, it's harder.
Well, you mentioned like a person in their 30s. I mean, this is also just a strange time in our life, right? Because we're kind of coming out of this period in our life where we're almost invincible, right? We could care less. Mm-hmm. It's just like, maybe not our 30s, maybe our 20s, but still, we're learning to be like... That transition's happening. We're becoming more adults, right?
Yeah.
But with that transition from sort of invincible to I'm getting older, right? Like, oh, I need to address things. And sometimes I always say if you have one foot in our 20s, right, and another foot in our 30s, we're pissing all over the current time, right? And so we need to, you know, just because something like this happens when we're starting to get older doesn't mean it's the end of our youth. And yeah. I guess that's sort of what it gets scary. And a lot of people will have an issue and not say anything about it. Right. And,
yeah.
and keep it a secret because whether that just shows they're getting older or whether they're concerned how somebody may think of them in a relationship. I know a lot of weird stuff happens in relationships, right? A lot of fear. And so you never know what's behind it, but it's nice to know that there, if something does come up, even when you're young, you can work on it and get better, maybe even better than you were before, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've had people that come to me and they don't tell me that they have back pain. They're coming to me because they want to fix the leakage that started, or they come to me for a very pelvic specific thing. And then I'm like, do you also have back pain? And they'll be like, oh my God, how did you know? And it's really common to have back pain in conjunction with pelvic floor stuff. So as we start working on their pelvic floor stuff, these problems they didn't even know there was a solution to start to resolve. And it's so exciting to see someone put those pieces together and realize that there was more potential for how good they could feel than they realized.
All right. So what's a pelvic floor? I guess we're going to have to get into some of this anatomy stuff.
This because, is what I do. Yeah. And I also wanted to circle back that, you know, people don't always talk about these things because nobody's asking them. And I actually am so excited. A local doula friend of mine, Katie Hope of Delaware Doula, and I are actually starting our own podcast to have these conversations
nice.
That people aren't talking about, because we're behind closed doors hearing women ask all these questions about sex and just their pelvic floor health. And is this normal? And is this not normal? And we're like, we think people probably want to sit in and listen.
Where are you going to put, are you going to have it on Spotify?
I have somebody that's helping organize all okay. that. So it should be on all the platforms. We're launching March 23rd. So
nice.
We've recorded a handful of episodes. And so we're hoping to get that out and just keep having more conversations.
Well, share it with me and I'll share it on.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Spreading the word.
Mercy podcast.
But to answer your question about what is a pelvic floor, it's all the muscles at the base of the pelvis. And I go even further to say it's the bottom of the core. So if you were to imagine a Coke can just sitting right in front of you, the very top of that Coke can is your diaphragm, which is the muscle of breathing. It's right below your lungs. And then the very bottom of the pelvis are all the pelvic floor muscles. There's a lot of different muscles that make that up. And then we have on the front, we think of the abdominal muscles, and there's some deep, smaller abdominal muscles. And then on the back of that cylinder are the kind of the lumbar stabilizer, so the back stabilizer muscles. And that whole system needs to work together as one functioning unit so that when we breathe in, we're activating, you know, a lengthening of the core because the organs are pressing down and the pelvic floor is lengthening. And then as you exhale, everything is lifting up. And that is, it's a complicated idea. But if we think about that Coke can, we want to keep pressure nice and open there. We don't really want to squeeze it in the middle. And so that pelvic floor really makes a big difference in how well we are using our core, how strong we are. You know, if you've been out for a surgery, or for a lot of the women I see, if you've had a C-section or a hysterectomy or things like that that interrupt the muscles, we can start to see changes in what's happening in the whole system where it just tightens up in a protective fashion. So those muscles at the bottom are really squeezing closed to keep us continent, but they're also relaxing and lengthening to do things like poop every day, which we all do, and you know, not everybody's talking about it.
I hope more than once a day. I mean, it's funny, you get older, yeah. But that's glorious.
Yeah. So, you know, so having a really healthy functioning pelvic floor where you're not worried about going to the bathroom. I have so many clients I've seen over the years that that's the biggest thing, especially as they get older. They're going on vacation with friends, and it becomes this whole thing if they're not able to really go to the bathroom in a healthy way, because it ends up taking up half their day and they're on a vacation with friends. They want to go do things, see where they're going, not worry about being on a boat.
Absolutely.
So I feel like I just jumped into seven different topics.
No, but I love it. But you know, the other thing is that men also struggle with the pelvic floor.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's probably not due to a C-section, but you know, we just don't realize how important it is to take care of ourselves. And we don't have that core. I mean, even for me, like you know, I have a back injury. I pull my back deadlifting. You know, my kids always say, "Any regrets, Daddy?" I said, "Yeah, deadlifting. That's my one regret in life," because it wrecked my back. But it's funny because it's all connected, right?
Yeah.
So I destroyed the left side of my spine, but it affects how the bottom of my left foot is, right? Mm-hmm. It affects my gait. It affects all this weird stuff that I don't. Like, why is my foot so, like, what's wrong with my left foot compared to my right foot? It's my gait. My spine's a little twisted. It's a little bent, and it affects everything. So just because, you know, like I would think, oh, maybe I need to see a foot doctor. Really, it's about my back. Yeah. So the point is that it's all connected. And, you know, just because, you know, the foot seems like it's the issue doesn't mean that it couldn't be, you know, your core or
absolutely.
Pelvic floor.
Well, and this is what, you know, it's so interesting because so many people will see a physical therapist. Like we often will have people that went to go see an orthopedic therapist who tried their best and did everything in their toolbox. But realistically, in school, most of us are not getting good training on the pelvic floor.
Right.
And the pelvis holds it all together. So a lot of times, you know, straightforward treatment of the back will resolve back problems. But if it doesn't, we look a little deeper and we start getting into what's going on with the pelvis, what's going on with the pelvic floor. You know, working with a therapist who has extra additional training in this just brings a whole new perspective and can create that hope where there may feel like there isn't any, or yeah, you've tried everything. Me and the other therapist, Caitlin, that I'm working with, see this all the time. You know, and it's really hopeful to be able to give people an opening, you know, and some hope that they didn't know. They thought they'd tried everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, you mentioned C-section. That's C-section, I think at the moment, probably feels great, right? Maybe my first wife and I had a child, and we, you know, she was going to have it naturally. That was this whole thing. I mean, and I get it. And she pushed, right, and pushed and pushed, and the little guy wouldn't come out. So she ended up having to get a C-section. Devastated her. She was devastated. Now, that was her personal thing. I mean, I shouldn't say devastated. She was bummed out, right? She'd prefer to have naturally had it. But it really creates a lot of havoc for the body when you slice across the belly like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to firm it back up, right? It can be a challenge.
Well, sorry to interrupt.
No, that's all right. And I don't want to speak like I know anything about a C-section because I am a man. I do not. But that's, you know, that can be the beginning of some challenges.
Absolutely. Well, I think when most of us, you know, aren't used to thinking about anatomy in like a PhD level way, right? We're just thinking, we see the abs, we see the belly. It looks like a C-section is just a simple slice through the abdomen. It's major abdominal surgery. And any other surgery, I mean, for any of you out there that have any relatives that have had a knee replacement or an ACL repair, like, they don't send people home doing major work immediately after that procedure.
Right.
But women have major abdominal surgery in the form of a C-section, and they go home and they care for an infant. And hopefully they have good support of people around them to help, but they're still up, they're breastfeeding, they're doing all of these things. And it really, we don't treat it like a major surgery, and it is.
Right.
And so, you know, and it's also devastating to kind of go in with one expectation of birth and what it's going to be like, and then feel like it's failed, because I see so many women that feel like it's them that failed. And really, it's so many systems that failed. And I'm starting to...
I don't think there's any fail.
Oh, 100%.
It may feel like that, but not in... I didn't feel any like my wife had failed at all. I thought, I felt really bad.
When I say fail, I think more of our, you know, and Katie and I are diving into this in some deep ways, but it's more of this, how are the hospitals set up? Are the hospitals really set up to let you progress as your body naturally wants to? Or are things being kind of pushed along, and sometimes people are scared into going into certain procedures?
Well, and I'm sure there's fear in the hospital, like, shit, we need to do this because we don't want this to turn into something that could be an issue, right?
Yes. So, yeah, there's liability, there's coverage, there's all of this. So one of the things that's changed in the 10 years since I've been doing this work is, we used to not really do any part of my exam is an internal exam. We're really taking a look at the pelvic floor muscles, just like we would any other group of muscles in the body. And it's so different from what you do at a GYN office or at a urologist if you're a guy, but really kind of taking a look at how those muscles function. And we used to not work on pregnant women because we just don't know. You know, we don't do a lot of research in the medical community on pregnant women for ethical reasons. Right. So we don't know. And then usually we just say, don't do it.
And, just don't do that.
Yeah. And part of what happens is that, you know, if someone's muscles are really tight and what they're trying to do is have a birth where those muscles are opening, lengthening, relaxing, and they're in this room with like a few people watching them and they're afraid that they're going to like poop on the table. Like it isn't.
Isn't that funny? I was just thinking the same thing. Yeah. Like all the things going on. Please God, don't let a poop come out.
Yeah. Right? So, but what do you do when you don't want a poop to come out? You tighten everything up,
right,
which is the opposite of what has to happen to deliver. So part of the work that I'm doing, and it's not just me, it's my whole field of pelvic health specialists. Like we are starting to work with women as long as there's no high risk reason that the doctor says it's not a good idea. But as long as you're okay to have sex during pregnancy, you're okay to do pelvic floor work. And we can train those muscles. I can build confidence with a woman being able to kind of feel what's happening with those muscles and knowing for sure what's happening so that she has months to prep for going into that birth and feels confident in what her body can do and what she's able to do, which helps with some of those labors that haven't progressed in the past and go to C-section. It can really help those women. I see a lot of people between first and second birth because they learn so much and then they want to do it differently. So, but 100%, it's never a fail. However it happens. And yeah, we're all just doing the best we can.
Well, and core strength, whether you're a woman or a man, I mean, it's key. I mean, it is like I can, you know, I like to try to take care of myself. I ran this morning. I like to, you know, I'll do push-ups. I'm 54, so I'm trying to, I'm not doing the gym. I need to get over that, right? I need to just take care of myself, my core, my pelvic floor, right? But, you know, if I go through a couple months where I'm not really doing anything and I start to feel a little loose and my body isn't as tight and, you know, my back hurts. You know, just everything feels weird. But when if I get up in the morning and I do some push-ups, I don't do setups, but if I do, I mean, push-ups works my core. It's amazing. Yeah. But if I'm doing that, getting back into running, getting back into doing some exercise, I feel better. Everything's moving a little bit better. My back doesn't hurt as bad. It's big time.
Yeah.
It's big time.
I mean, it's empowering to stay active. I think there's so much, I don't know how it is toward, I think it's less towards men than it is towards women, but like, there's out like so many women didn't grow up exercising or lifting weights, or there have been these messages, you know, from professionals like me, you know, before we knew better, that like you should just stop lifting, you shouldn't do these things because you might like have issues with prolapse or you might like cause more damage to your body. So many people just slowly start to give things up, whether it's because they've had pain and it just doesn't feel the same as it used to, or they're giving it up because a medical professional or a gym professional has just told them, you know, be afraid of doing this thing. But it's so important for our mental and physical health to stay active, whatever that looks like, whether it's riding the bike, going for a run, going to the gym, you know, being with your grandkids or your kids. Like,
well, yeah. I think we have to figure out our motivation. I mean, when we're kids or younger or teens or, you know, early 20s, our motivation is to look awesome, right? We want to look good. We want to find a mate, right? We want to make a family. We want to just be great. But as we get, like, for me, as I get older, it isn't about that. It's about, like, going to the bathroom, right? I run because the one thing that comes from running is a good poop, right?
Yeah.
And it's glorious. And I love to run for that. And I don't care what I look like. It's about, you know, keep it moving. And I think we, you know, we lose that idea that we want to do this just for our looks, and we don't realize that it's really, and you said it, the mental side of it. It's also, to me, it's mental medication. I said, you want to learn about yourself? Go for a run. I don't care if you've ever run in your life. Just, I'm going to run on Monday and just let that experiment start and learn about yourself, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in our head, whether it's positive or negative. Don't do it. You're going to hurt yourself. Your core, your pelvic floor is not good. You shouldn't be doing this. And it's like, it's weird. This team that doesn't want us to do much. And so you have to push through it. But I see that's where that first miracle starts. Push through those no's, don't do's. And then you start learning about yourself. And it's awesome.
Yeah, that's so true. Whether you meditate to get there or run to get there, like you can learn so much about that, like those inner voices that come up and are informing how you feel about yourself and what's going on.
Well, I always say, like, the first mile, you know, I slay all my enemies. Right. And then my second mile, I walk through the bodies. Right. And then the third mile, I'm like, are you guys all right? Right. I feel bad. Right. And then the fourth mile, I make my amends. And then at the fifth mile, I'm like, okay, that was crazy. Right. But it's always this battle of self insecurity, self-centeredness, humility, you know, whether it's spirituality, lack of, but it's this journey that started. Yeah. And it starts off when I wake up. Don't run. Your knees are going to hurt. And I'm like, who am I talking to right now? And yeah. You mentioned a voice. I wasn't going to come off as a crazy person, but it is a voice.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's a sense, right? Don't do it. You're never, it's too cold. And you push through it. I run with my buddy James, and we run at 5:30 in the morning.
Oh,
in the
gosh.
Freezing cold. We ran last week in the snow. I said, I only run so I can scrape the temperature into this rail and take a picture of it, right? I'm sick, but, you know, I'm learning.
Yeah.
It's just, it's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's such great awareness. I was thinking when you were talking about running for good poops that there's no way you thought this morning that this is the conversation you were going to be having today.
This is a conversation I would have rather had. I love talking about pooping. Right? It's huge.
It is. It is.
And I wish it was huger, right? I wish it was bigger.
Feels really nice, you
well,
know?
Well, yeah. Because there's nothing worse than the way we feel when we're not eating correctly, eating well, eating poor, making bad, poor food decisions, and then you regret it because you get backed up and your stomach gets extended. I mean, like, I can have a bad couple meals, and I'm like, I need to go to, you know, a retreat, right? A weight retreat. I'm off the scales. But then you have a, you know, good thing there, and then you're like, I'm back. I don't need a diet. You know, it was all in my intestines.
Yeah.
So maintaining that keeps me a little more, you know, less.
It does. It's less, part of feeling sane in yourself.
Yeah.
Part. I mean, just having good bowel health is really a foundational. It's like sleep. So.
Well, and the Cologuard? They've kind of made kind of fun with it too.
Is that the test?
Yeah, Cologuard is, and I don't recommend it. You know, go see a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Go see someone like, you know, that's trained in this. But it does also allow people that maybe are a little afraid to go to the doctor to get at least something to test. But, you know, they've made light of poop.
Yeah.
And I think we all need to lighten up.
So has the Squatty Potty. I don't know. Are you familiar with the Squatty Potty?
Absolutely.
I mean, they did such a great job with those advertisements with the unicorn pooping rainbow ice cream.
Yep.
And I remember when it first came out years ago, because as pelvic health PTs, you're like, yes, this is great. And I put one in my house, and every guest that came to visit us went home and bought one. And like now when I ask my clients, like, are you, like, it's just a foundational question I ask. Are you using a Squatty Potty? It's almost 100% yes. So they have infiltrated houses everywhere, and people are really, you know, getting comfortable with that better position for pelvic health.
Well, I honestly, we're not going to take this the whole poop podcast, but
yeah.
I do think that we should do a better job with children in school and pooping and making it more comfortable for them, less embarrassing, more privacy. There's a lot of shame at 10, 9, 10, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old when you poop. Some kids are like, they don't care. But there are real kids that have a lot of fear. They're embarrassed about it, you know, won't do it, will hold it all day. That's how I was. I was like, I am not pooping at school. There is no chance in hell. I think we need to be better about that, because there are kids that are petrified of the idea. Other kids making fun of you. They should have privacy, and there shouldn't be so much shame in it. And I think we could be educating kids to later, you know, be better in their health.
Yeah. And even to take that to a broader concept, I think just teaching people how to listen to their body cues at a young age, whether it's needing rest, sleep, going to the bathroom, like we start with these things where it's like, you need to just go just in case before we get in the car, or you need to go just before bed, or at school, you can only go at certain times. And depending on the routine, I mean, I even see this with teachers that like just don't have time to go to the bathroom.
Listen, I'm 54 and I'm not pooping at Home Depot.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I still have poop shame. And it's a shame, right?
Yeah. So it's like, I think we can, you really put the finger on something that I talk about frequently, which is just, you know, when my clients come to me and they're like, I don't know why, like, I struggle with this. And I'm like, think back to your childhood. This stuff isn't new. Right. It didn't just start. Like, you didn't just start feeling this way. It started with messages that you learned, like well-intentioned messages, a parent just saying, go to the bathroom before we get in the car. And then like you think like, I need to go every time before I get in the car. And so that bladder starts to become like this, you know, dictator.
Walnut. It's like my wife.
Yeah.
She goes to the bathroom, and then at the front door, she's got to go to the bathroom again.
Yeah.
So is this because she hasn't trained her bladder to hold more?
Yeah. So the example I give, there's no real thing as a small bladder, but that doesn't feel real to a lot of people. They feel like they have very small bladders. I like to think of the bladder, depending if I don't have kids, so I think of it like a dog without training. But you could also think of it like a toddler. If a toddler isn't getting what it wants or does, it wants what they want. You know, if a toddler thinks that you don't hear them, they get louder. Like they just try to get your attention, and they'll do anything to get your attention until you acknowledge and let them know, I've heard you, and I'll get to this in just a moment. And the bladder is very similar. The bladder, because of all these times over the years where we've peed just in case, or we've held it forever because we were at work, and you know, PTs are, anyone in healthcare is guilty of this. Like we just get busy and we don't go to the bathroom. So for years of like holding forever and just ignoring the bladder, it thinks that you're not going to do what you need to do. So it starts out at a scream. It's just shouting at you to go to the bathroom as soon as any liquid fills it. So imagine a 2-cup measuring cup. Like we all have one in our house. Like that is how much liquid the bladder holds.
2 cups.
Cups. Now, most of us aren't going to pee at 2 cups full. That's going to feel very, very full.
That's a lot.
But when you're going to the bathroom, if you're not going like at least like a cup, you know, a cup and a half, chances are there is some training that you can do to help lengthen out that period of time.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, how many times have you gone to the bathroom and this is an experience for me where it's just a trickle. It's just a little bit.
Yeah, and you can't, it's like you almost forgot how to pee.
Yeah.
Like you held it too long.
Yeah.
Getting punished.
So it's, yeah. And there are a lot of different things that can play into this, but I saw a lot of it after the pandemic when people moved into working from home and they could go to the bathroom whenever they wanted. So they were going like 75 times a day, you know, just any time they felt the need to go, they would go to the bathroom.
So you're not helping yourself by peeing as much.
Yeah, because then it just trains the bladder that every time a few ounces get into the bladder, it needs to be emptied. And so we, like what I do with people, it's really a mind body thing. It's real what's happening. Like it's not in your head, like, but you do feel those sensations. But with a little mindfulness and a little bit of awareness of what's happening, we can distract. We can, you know, redirect, like think about your kids, like you can redirect them to a different task and then they don't need your attention right away. And so we just redirect the bladder. We start to train it to go a little bit longer, you know, every 2 to 3 hours, so that when you're emptying, it's a really like solid empty and it's not running your life. Like,
well, you know, it's funny that you say that because, you know, my wife's like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. Oh, I got to go to the bathroom. Like, you know, every, I don't know. And this isn't about trying to embarrass her because it's, no. I think a lot of people have this thing, but she's like, I feel like I need to go to the bathroom. But she'll sleep 7 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, how'd you go 7 hours? And then, but you can't go 20 minutes or 30 minutes. So it is weird that it could be, yeah, what we, it's like, yeah.
I was laughing because I went, I don't normally work out in the afternoon, and I had an afternoon session with my trainer. And so I go to the gym and I'm in there for an hour and I see the evening class come in, which is mostly women, like mostly women in their 40s and 50s. And every single person in that class peed twice. In the hour. And I was like, what is going on? I mean, it's just been an hour, but it's more normal than it's not. I think more people deal with this than don't. And really, it doesn't, if it's not bothering you, like we don't have to solve every problem, right? But if it starts to feel like it's like you can't go to a social event because you're peeing all the time or you're worried about, is there going to be a good bathroom there? Like, if those things are starting to consume time and start to make decisions where you stay home, like there are such easy solutions. And what we're talking about specifically is one of the most fun things when I have someone come in, because I can give them a couple tips and like within a session or two, within a week or two, they're coming in and like things have drastically changed, which is incredible, right? Like, because so many people have been living like this for a long time. We make simple shifts and they're out living their life.
That's crazy. That's crazy how life kind of dictates our life, right? You know, I always say all my problems are just because of the other humans. Right? Do you ever imagine what your life would be like if there wasn't any other humans? Just,
I'd be kind of lonely. But
of course, it'd be lonely. But it would, I be, you know, like I like to think that, you know, I wake up with the heart like of love, right? All joy and love, and then the rest of my day gets dictated by things that are scary or fear. Or worry, right? And so, like, I wake up to an alarm right away. What am I worried about? Being late. Now I'm in a whole different mindset. It's less, a little more victim-y and less humility. So, yeah, it's pick and choosing how we live our life, pick and choosing who's in it, you know, really determines or can help determine how our life is on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. So you really deal with a lot of people. So bathroom issues are a thing.
Yeah, bathroom issues are a thing. And I also want to give a shout out to endometriosis, because that is...
Hey, endometriosis.
I'm totally changing directions, but so much of why I do what I do is because I was the person that had all the problems and I never would have seen a pelvic health. I had a therapist. I had way too much shame. I had way too much... discomfort. I just wasn't comfortable with my own body. I didn't come from a family where we talked about these things. It was just like, you know, we don't talk about this. And so
shoulders up.
Yeah. So I got out and I got really fortunate. I was out in Seattle practicing, which is where kind of one of the birthplaces of pelvic health PT was. So there were a lot more therapists doing it out there. And I had a colleague that I think recognized that I was never going to see her. So she was like, go to a class because I'll learn anything, right? So I signed up, went to the class, started learning about pelvic health. And I was like, oh my God, like this is part of the problem. Like this is why I've had hip pain and back pain. And then it took me, I could go on for like hours on my story.
So was it about endometriosis? And what is it? Because I don't know.
Yeah. So fast forward about 10 years, I finally got an endometriosis diagnosis. I had been dealing with infertility for years. We'd gone through IVF. We've done multiple rounds of like IUIs, just a lot of very invasive stuff. So I had infertility, I had pelvic pain, and I had chronic constipation, which are three of the classic primary symptoms of endometriosis, but no one in my medical journey ever put the pieces together. So I went through all of this treatment, and finally I was like, I think I might have endometriosis. And I started learning about it, and I got connected with a surgeon in Baltimore who really, this is just all she does. And I finally had surgery last year, and it totally changed my life. But I've been on this like 18-month journey of just learning everything I can about endometriosis. And it's making me rethink my, so many of the clients that I see, because 1 in 10 American women have endometriosis. And basically endo is, cells that are similar to the uterine lining that live outside the uterus.
Okay.
And the best theory that we have at this point, the best science we have, shows that people are born with it. It's passed down through through our genetics. And then life, you know, influences who gets it, who doesn't. Like, who has symptoms from it and who doesn't. So it isn't like coming from your uterus. It's not coming from your periods. It's already laid down. And then through life experience, kind of like autoimmune diseases, some people start to have more symptoms than others. But pain is pain, pelvic pain, painful sex, infertility, constipation, painful bowel movements are some of the big red flags that we really need to do a workup for endometriosis. And then where I come in with clients is that if they've been in pain for a long time, if they've had these issues for a long time, their bodies are on guard. Like, they just, everything hurts.
Yeah.
So I do a lot with helping teach about what endometriosis is, help coach them and counsel them to kind of take action. And if they don't feel like they're getting the care they need, which is very common in the endometriosis space because it's not something that's well understood and trained for, to find new providers that are listening to them and believe them, believe their pain, and get solutions.
Believe their pain, right? So what is the other, is there another name for it?
No, adenomyosis is a sister condition, and that does impact the uterus. So that is endometriosis that is in the uterus, which is, they're different conditions, but they follow kind of similar.
Well, it's one of those patterns. Things that it's like, I hurt. And you're like, where? Here. And this is my issue. And you're like, So when you say believe, right? Because it's my endometriosis, right? It's one of those things that's hard to, and I don't even know why I'm, as a guy, even talking about this, because, because I don't know. But it seems like one of those things, it's hard to pinpoint. It's hard to identify. It's not like a broken knee, right? And I think a lot of people aren't given, aren't taken seriously when they have this, because it is hard to pinpoint and identify, sort of. Am I right about
that? Yeah, 100%. And men and women have different experiences at the doctor, but it is very, very common with these kind of pain conditions for women to not be believed, to be thought of as pain-seeking, looking for pain medications. And I can tell you, having had endometriosis, and hopefully having all of it removed, but I was on the floor thinking I was dying. Like, I was in so much pain, and it was my husband who saw me and was like, this is not okay.
Right.
But I think women are so conditioned to like deal with things. Like, I just had a client was telling me about a friend of hers who went in for a procedure that's a painful procedure, and no medication was given at all. It was a GYN procedure. They're just like, it won't be that bad. And like, it was that bad. And I'm like, they would never do a vasectomy and not give pain medication,
right?
You know, and probably lunch and like, you know, some dessert afterwards. Like,
so do you think that they, what was their worry?
I think for so often, I think, and it's happened to me before, I go in for a procedure and they're like, it won't be that bad. And I actually blacked out during one procedure because it was so painful.
Yeah.
And I think there's just this underestimation of how painful things are, and that women deserve to be medicated for procedures that are going to be invasive. And that when we come in talking about our pain and that it is that bad and like, I think I'm going to die, like, right. I'm not making it up to get attention. Right. I'm really in that level of pain, and I need something more than just a Tylenol and some birth control. Like, I need someone to figure out why I'm in this kind of pain. Because if someone, endometriosis is not cancer, but I think the visual really helps to understand. Like, when someone has cancer, we don't say, go home, like, take this, you know, very subtle pain medication and we'll take a look at it in like 8 months and see how you're doing. Like, we come up with an action plan. And a lot of times that action plan is we're going to remove the cancer if it's possible. Mm. You know, we're going to do everything we can to treat this and to address it. And endometriosis is often like, people are told, go on this anti-inflammatory diet, like, take birth control, you know, take pain medication, go on these like serious meds that suppress your cycle so that you're effectively in menopause, even though you're in your 20s. Right. And they're just sent home with that. Like, that, it's not that some of those things don't have applications somewhere along the journey, but like, coming from someone who's been through this journey and works with women along this journey, like, we need to find out what's really going on and treat the root cause, because most women with endometriosis start presenting in their teenage years and they go through their teens and their 20s. And for me, I will never know for sure, but I think if my symptoms had been identified and addressed in my teens, I wouldn't have dealt with the infertility issues that I dealt with. But because I went, you know, 20 years right. with all of this, like, who knows what impact that had, but it certainly had an impact on my sex life and on my fertility journey.
Well, and where were we 20 years ago, right? Where were we 40 years ago? I mean, yeah. It's like, I told my dad last night, I go, I think this is the year we're going to find out about UFOs. He's like, UFOs aren't real. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like this is the year. I feel like we've really done a lot of work. Yeah. So maybe this is the year, you know, we figure out and start. I still don't. Did you tell me what it is? I don't even know what endometriosis is.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit, but endometriosis is cells that are like the uterine lining, and they live outside the uterus. Okay. So they live like throughout the pelvis. They can live in, they really can live anywhere, but the main places are along the bowel, along the abdominal muscle walls, and along the diaphragm are kind of the main places. So people can have, I mean, we think of painful periods, which is, you know, I don't know if you have daughters, but,
she's 10.
Yeah. Okay. So not there yet.
No.
But like, there's this assumption, you know, culturally that periods are painful. Like, women just, you know, it's perpetuated by our mothers, grandmothers, friends.
Wait. So what you're saying is they're not, has this been a, have we been tricked?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just we don't know what we don't know.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
My wife tells me every month I'm in a lot of pain. I said, okay.
Yeah. And I think some changes are okay, but that pain should be something that you take a Tylenol for.
Right.
And you go on with your life.
And I think that's the way it is.
It's for, but for a lot of women, they've heard periods are painful and they are literally missing days of their life. They're missing days of school. They're like at home, not sure if they're going to live to see the next day because they're in so much pain. That is not normal.
Is that because they're surrounded by people that allow that?
It's a cultural thing. We talk about how periods are painful. I mean, I've been practicing in this specialty for the better part of, I guess I'm over a decade now, and it took me 10 years to get diagnosis. So my heart is with any woman dealing with these symptoms.
Sure.
Because I'm already in these spaces. I have access. I'm in spaces learning, and I know where to look for resources, and I still had trouble getting a diagnosis.
So I'm still confused. So cells that are similar to those of the uterus. Mm-hmm. So out of the uterus, so does they behave like a uterus? Is there something like, is there a sloughing? Is there something that takes place in these cells that creates pain other places than the uterus? Is that what's...
So they are, you know, the... We're still learning a lot, but they are estrogen dependent. So like when you have higher levels of estrogen, like around the period, you will have an activation of those cells. But for some women, it doesn't follow a cyclical pattern. They just have things like it's really painful to poop. It's very uncomfortable to have sex. They just have a lot of discomfort in their pelvis area, or they just feel really bloated and there's really no explanation for why they're so bloated. So some women will follow a real, like every time they have their, for me, it was very much like every time I had my period, like there would be a solid day in there where I had to quit everything in my life. Like I couldn't go to work. I couldn't go teach my Pilates class. Like I couldn't do anything. Mine was cyclical, but for other women, it's not, it's just kind of like a little bit random, but one in 10 women in the US.
It sounds like it's still tough to be diagnosed with this. It's still, I'm still a little confused on what it is.
Yeah. So it's, you're not alone.
And it's not important that I do know, right? I'm just a dumb guy, right? But just for the sake of people listening to try to understand, I'm still confused on what it is. Yeah. But it sounds like you don't want this.
You don't want it. And like, honestly, there are so few doctors that truly specialize in endometriosis in the United States that are up on current learning. And it's not every GYN's, it's not their fault that they're not. They don't learn it in medical school. Like they have like a short lecture on it. Right. So if someone's not really committed to, understanding the current research, if it's not their specialty, if they're not seeing it all day long, if they're delivering babies all day, like they're not going to spend hours figuring out what's current in endometriosis. Right. So a lot of times they're just ill-equipped to see the women that are in front of them and they don't know what they don't know. So it's been taught, give them birth control, do things like this. And that unfortunately just kind of pushes off getting to diagnosis. What's really important is to see a doctor that starts with, what are your goals? Are you trying to get pregnant? Where are you at with that process? Because that's going to change how aggressively we treat this. But for a lot of women, getting the surgery and removing the endometriosis, if possible, increases their fertility.
Okay.
Not always, but it certainly can. And so we just...
So these cells can get like in the fallopian tubes and can get up into those parts? And
I don't actually know what the mechanism of infertility is. Like Mine wasn't anywhere near that, but I still had infertility. So undiagnosed infertility is a classic symptom of endometriosis.
Yeah. Well, I always say it's because you're trying. It's like if we weren't trying, we'd probably get pregnant right away. But since it's something we really want,
yeah,
it's hard.
So, yeah. So it's just, I always like to bring that and shed a little light on it because it's near and dear to my heart and it's 1 in 10. I mean, I was looking up, I think there's a stat that like 1 in 10 Americans gets their water from the Colorado River. Like that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's how many people in the United States, how many women have endometriosis. And yet there's about 300 to 400 doctors in the US that really, really know what they're doing when it comes to diagnosing and treating. That's not enough.
Right. Well, and it's, as a person with a back issue, it sort of kind of reminds me of that. You know, it used to be this, I can't tell you where it hurts. I can't tell you what to do to fix it. I just know that it hurts. And everybody's got to be like, okay. So there was this kind of this gray area. And I do, and you mentioned it, I do think that people were relying maybe on pain medication, unfortunately, to handle it. It's the same thing. Oh, I got a back problem. They're like, okay, what do you want? Back pain medicine, man? It's like, no. I'd like an MRI. I'd like to figure out how I can stop.
I just like to feel better.
Yeah. I mean, in physical therapy, unfortunately, now it's almost like this regimen. You got to do this. You got to do physical therapy. You got to go through all these different things to get to the point where they allow you to get an MRI. It's mm-hmm. like, my back hurts. Mm-hmm, sure. We think you're here for pain medication. And that's how it always feels.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm not. I don't.
Which
I'm
is
sober.
Such an icky feeling, right? Because You're like, I really just want to move better and run and like do the things I want to do.
Right. Well, there's maybe a group of people that do like pain medication or do want to, find medication through whatever that they're dealing with. But I don't, I don't want to take pain medication. I finally got an injection. What I've learned is this is how it is. This is just kind of what I've got. I'm not saying that's for endometriosis, but for back pain, I've had to lower my expectations a little bit and just understand what it is that I can do and I can't do. But it's a tough thing and it's great that it sounds like it's getting a little bit more light because I know a lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot. I know there are people out there that have been like, this is what I got. I can't explain it, but I have a lot of pain. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Yeah. And it's hard when they're the pains we can't see. You know, we don't see someone limping because they sprain an ankle. Like,
Well, plus now we're in this kind of time where like nobody wants to work, right? That's everybody's opinion. Nobody wants to work. Everyone's on pain medication. Everyone wants free money. And that's not, I don't think that's the case. People do want to work. People don't want to be in pain. People don't want to be on pain medication. And so I wanted to know, what can you do to extend the amount of time before you have to pee? Because this, I feel like I could really bring home and teach my wife.
Like one takeaway. Yeah. So this is, it's a fun one. So it's really simple. What I have people start with is first squeeze the muscles.
Okay.
So like if you're a guy, that's that sensation of kind of like pulling up if you're getting into cold water. Yep. So you just kind of give that lift and squeeze like five times really quickly.
Okay.
If you're a lady, like you're going to squeeze, like you're trying to stop peeing, like you're trying to stop midstream. You just squeeze five times really quickly or squeeze your knees together.
Does that have a name?
Well, yes. Kegel, or pelvic floor muscle contraction.
Okay. So we're familiar with the Kegel because some people try to tighten it up.
Yep.
Right. For whatever reason. But so that muscle.
Yep. That muscle.
So I have a Kegel?
Yeah. Guys have it too.
Hey.
Yeah. Okay. They're just slightly different. I mean, it's all the same muscle, just oriented a little differently.
Sure.
So you squeeze five times and you can also just squeeze your knees five times, like, same idea. So we want to do something to kind of interrupt what's happening. And then after that, you distract yourself. So you just go do something else and distract yourself. And typically that will work a little bit to delay what's going on. And then when that sensation to go to the bathroom comes back, you walk with control to the bathroom. You take your clothes off with control. You sit down and you just try to do it in a slow, controlled way. And this, it may not work immediately, but if we can start to create a little bit of a delay, then we can grow in that delay. And for some people, they just find that like, they were like, that's all I needed. Like, I just needed to know that. And like, all of a sudden they're able to, you know, go back to peeing every 2 or 3 hours. But if it's someone that's going constantly, they may need a little bit of retraining.
Well, it's funny that it's sort of like trying to learn how to run. Right. You know, I always say you should try to run. People say, I can't run. I said, run 10 feet and then walk 7 laps. Right. Run 12 feet, walk 7 laps. I mean, set little goals, set little things. But before, you know, it's like, you know, my daughter, 10, she's like, oh, my world, everybody's mean. And I'm like, or I'm not doing this. And I go, well, we're so focused. Let's open up a little broader and look like I remember you when you were 4. You were definitely not as smart at 4 as you are at 10. So we have progress. We're making progress. It may not always seem like it in her world, but in my world, I'm like, you're doing fantastic. So it's just setting those little goals and trying to just push through them and get a little bit better and a little bit better. And we can do a lot of different stuff if we just take little bites.
Oh, 100%. I always joke about that, like recovering perfectionist thing, because that perfectionism like keeps people, because they're like, I can't run 10 miles. And it's like, no one started with 10 miles, like just like you're saying, you know, they started with a few steps and build it up a little bit more, a little bit more. They get used to that voice and what to do with that voice when it comes up,
the
and
voice,
you know, get really used to building that muscle. So,
well, and I'm sure that there's, do you, so, you know, squeezing, holding, these muscles are Kegel muscles, you know, maybe for a minute, right? Or maybe 2 minutes, always maybe.
We're going to hold off on holding too much. They're muscles that should come on, contract, and then relax, and we don't think about it.
Holding.
We need them when we need them. But it's like, I give the example of your bicep. You know, think about your bicep muscle. So you're picking up a bag of groceries. Like you don't want to carry that heavy bag of groceries all day long with a full contraction. You pick it up when you need it, and then you set it down. And we want the pelvic floor muscles to do the same thing. And this is, this is a fun and frustrating part of my job, but there's so much out there that's like, you know, people have been told to do like 800 Kegels a day, or just hold your muscles tight, just hold everything in tight. And it's like, we actually need muscles that aren't tight all day. So we need to know how to contract them, but we also need to know how to let them go.
Yeah.
So, but you can practice engaging, but.
And you know, we're humans. So you tell us to do 5, we're going to say 10's better.
Yeah.
Someone's gotten up to 800 Kegels. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a tight muscle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how'd you get into this? I mean, what was your journey? Did you always find the human body interesting, or did something happen that you're like, man, I want to learn about this?
You know, as a, I I always loved anatomy and physiology. Like, it came to me really easy. I've been studying anatomy since high school. Like, I mean, I remember doing my first like animal dissection. I don't know if they still do that, but I did that in high school and I was just fascinated by anatomy. And that kind of took me through a kinesiology degree in undergraduate. And then I went and got my doctorate in physical therapy. And, you know, I always thought I would work with kids, and something took me out to Seattle. Like, I just wanted to get out of the Midwest. I'm from Indiana originally. So I got out to Seattle working in an orthopedic clinic. And that's when I started meeting, you know, other therapists that were doing pelvic health. And again, I never would have, in school, I was like, I'm not ever doing pelvic health. I don't want to learn about it. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to talk to people about these things. And I, you know, because of my own hip pain and back pain that wasn't getting better, I was doing all the things. I was in PT, I was in massage therapy, I was in chiropractic. And it was helping a little bit, but it wasn't really getting better. And so when I went to the pelvic floor class, I actually, the word is palpated. Like, we say palpated as like, you know, medical touch. But someone actually touched my pelvic floor for the first time, and I almost hit the ceiling. It was like, that was my pain. No one had ever felt and identified my pain before. And at that point, I was just hooked. I'm like, I want to learn everything I can. And then we moved to Delaware. And it took me a while to get, I was up in Dover and I was just like knocking on doors, like, can I start a pelvic health program? Will anybody take me on? And it took a little while. But I finally met, she's now retired, but I met, you know, the PT director at Bay Health, and she was like, come work for us, like, do this for us. And so she really gave me, you know, an open door to start marketing this and start taking clients and really build a program up. And so we did, and we did that. And then the rest has been history. I mean, I see people for so many things. Like, they come to me for pelvic floor, and then we are doing whole body. We're doing mind body stuff. We're helping them with stress in their lives. But like, pelvic health is the foundation of what I do and why people come to me. But that was 2012 when I started. So I guess we're in 11 years now.
One of the things that, and you talk about mental and, you know, that kind of stuff, but, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about recently is that it seems like a lot of the decisions I've made in my life are sort of based around fear, like scared, you know, all through school. You know, you go to school because you don't want to fail, right? You got to, the alarm goes off. It's, I got to get to school. Can't be late. It's just this fear that has ruled through all of my life. And as we get older, we start to get to do things, right? Instead of have to. Mm-hmm. Like, and I was thinking about like all the things that I've tried to learn that I had to, that I never liked or learned, right? But when you become passionate about something, you get to, right? This is something like, oh, this is actually really, I don't have to do this. I'm really interested in it. And yeah. I get to learn about this stuff. And then that stuff sort of sticks, right? You're like, wow, wonder why I was able to remember all that and none of the stuff that I had to, right? And
yeah.
So this whole, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, you know, women, it seemed like through stories I've seen, you know, were very private about the chin down, right? Because it's... You didn't share that with your husband. You know, we're more open about our bodies now. But back in the days, you didn't talk about that with your husband. It was very private.
Mm-hmm.
And some people suffered in privacy or privately. And, you know, we get to talk about this stuff now. We get to be there for people. People are allowed to talk about this stuff and don't have to be embarrassed, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, because, God, I can't imagine all the people, whether a man or a woman, right? You know, like I said, my dad, he's 86. He had a procedure done, and some of these things became an issue for a little bit, you know, while he was recovering. And, you know, as a guy who's getting older, first of all, you just don't want to realize the fact that you can't always take care of yourself like we used to, right? And then all of a sudden to have to do one of these, having to deal with stuff like this, you know, it's tough, but we don't have to be as embarrassed or ashamed as for whatever reason we felt like we had to in the past. And that's because of people like you that are helping people, and we get to talk about on this podcast, poop and all sorts of different things.
Oh, yeah. But it's always fun.
Listen, 20 years old, what was important? A car, right? A job. 55 years old, what's important? Pooping. it's huge.
Priorities.
Yeah, it's big time for me. And it's because I want to be healthy. And when that doesn't happen, it shows that you haven't eaten well, right? Or I haven't drank enough water, or I haven't done something. I can really see whether it's the, I don't want to say it's bad behavior, but, you know, not thinking of myself in the health-wise behavior has led to this. Yeah. And we don't realize it. We don't think, I mean, as a kid, you're like, oh, my stomach hurts. Who cares? Let's, you know, but now I'm like, it's because I'm getting old, right? And I have to eat better and I have to do different things. So, yeah, it's just, it's great to have you on the podcast and to learn about this stuff. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I love what you were saying. Like, it is, it's such a vulnerable place always to ask for help. And it's especially vulnerable when it's something that's so personal. So it's, it just having a space where people know they're going to come in, and it's no judgment. We talk about anything and everything, and we don't have to if it's too much for someone. So,
well, we also have to remember when someone mentions something like this, how I respond. As soon as someone says poop or pee, I giggle, right? You know, I think it's silly and because I don't have any issues, but I have to think about that. Is the person that I'm responding to that way been dealing with this for 30 years, right? Or this issue, and I'm sort of, I have this weird thing where I laugh at nervous moments. Like someone will say something like, what are you laughing about? I go, I don't know. It just came out. But you know how I respond too, because someone may be saying it out loud for the first time and just mortified about the idea. So,
yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
that's
you.
That's an hour. I mean, we could probably talk about a bunch of stuff. Listen, if you want to come back, you're more than welcome to come back and chat about whatever. But, I appreciate it. It was really great to meet you and have you on the podcast. Are you like on social media?
Uh-huh.
Do you talk about this stuff like on your TikTok?
I have a love hate with social media.
Listen, we all do.
Yeah. We're
still recording.
Oh, we're still recording.
We're still going.
I am on social media. I am working on being a more consistent poster, but I do talk about these things. I also talk about some really nice, movement-based things people can do just for back, you know, tightness or hip tightness. So I'm on Instagram at Mindful Physio. No, I'm on Instagram at Dr. Megan Anderson.
Okay.
I used to be the other. And then Facebook, Megan Anderson Physical Therapy. And I also have a newsletter that gets a little, I send more kind of personal things out on that. So
if somebody wants to get a hold of you, they could probably reach out through Facebook.
And I have a great website too. MeganAndersonPT.com. I have tons of resources on there. I have some videos, and there's a way to contact me and reach out to get on my email list, or just reach out to schedule a discovery call to learn more. So my website is really robust and great. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And like I said, the door's always open. If you want to come back, love to have you back.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.